Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a great day on this Wednesday. We say hello and good afternoon to Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. Coach, how you doing?
Good afternoon, fellas. How you guys?
We're doing fantastic. I'm going to throw you with a curveball right out of the gates, okay?
Uh-oh.
Because I don't no, it's just something about your childhood that we went down this rabbit hole the last 30 minutes on the show and did not realize we were going to get the input that we did from the listeners. But how would you answer this question? Name one thing from your childhood that young people today wouldn't understand. Something from your childhood that probably some kids on your basketball team would just tilt their head and they would say, Coach, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Probably a cassette tape.
Yep.
That's
cassette
right.
Tape and using a pen or a pencil to wind it once it they wouldn't know what to do with it.
Oh, man, that's a that skill
that
you have
fantastic.
To have. You have to have that skill.
That is exactly what we're looking for. That is something
you know,
that have your
and,
kids
and imagine
going.
Imagine it actually breaking and then having to get a little piece of scotch tape to splice it up. That's you really love that tape.
Oh, man,
oh,
did
that,
we all do that or what?
That's a real skill. The person in your neighborhood who could pull that off was talented. That scotch tape to keep
no
the tape
doubt.
Alive when it broke.
Now, this
My
is going to
– best.
This will test your memory. So what was that cassette tape for you that you probably played so much you wore it out that you had to tape it over and over a couple of times just to keep listening to it? What would that group
new
be?
Edition.
New Edition.
Yeah.
That
it
is
was
great.
Cool it now.
Yeah. Mr. Telephone Man was on that tape,
oh,
I think.
Oh, man, you already know it. That was the jam.
That is fantastic.
I had that tape. I definitely had that tape.
No doubt. I definitely had that tape. So how's life been under these, you know, unusual times for you?
Man, it's been interesting, really, man. I mean, obviously been able to spend a lot of time with family and, you know, obviously traveling so much over the last, you know, probably ever, right? Always going somewhere in season or off season, planning on doing something, and now just being able to just stay home with family and a little too much, drinking a little too much, but I am working out, so it's balancing it out a little bit.
You're right. We have definitely changed some habits for sure. We've talked about on this show, it's, you know, trying to find the positives, trying to find some good things out of doing a four-hour show every day with no live sports, even though finally some things are starting to come around. But we've had some interviews, really, really good interviews, where just feel like people are relaxed and things are slowed down and you're just getting some real genuine interviews where we can talk about you rewinding or taping your new edition cassette tape that, you know, we wouldn't be talking about that with you coming into a season or during a season. So it's allowed us to, you know, get to know people better, hear things that you're never going to talk about under normal circumstances. Have you found that to be true with talking, you know, maybe on the recruiting trail? Is it easier now for these coaches on the recruiting trail and also getting to know your kids better, whether it's via Zoom or, you know, however much you talk to your coaches and your kids these days?
I think that's a great point, man. I think just being able to, you know, with so much we took for granted, right? Just, you know, because we were able to go and move so freely and do so much and even work, you know, we figure out we're still able to get, you know, get work done and, you know, with the Zoom and still able to talk. I mean, going in the office from 9 to 5, I think that's what we figured out. That a lot of that is overrated. We
yeah.
can still get a lot accomplished without just the having the busy work mentality. I have to be on the clock. And I think, you know, Obviously, we want to get back, and I think the fellowship and camaraderie of being around people and being around staff and everything is cool. But I just think this has showed us that, hey, man, we can we can be by ourselves a little bit more. We can still enjoy each other's company and you know, take advantage of this time. But, I mean, like I said, it hadn't been – you know, I'm kind of a homebody anyway, so it hadn't been a big drastic change for me. I do like to go out to eat, so I miss going out to restaurants and things like that. But, you know, the golf course is still open. I'm still going out there and hacking it up big time. So, you know, it's not all bad.
Yeah, I miss the restaurant scene as well. It's interesting. Some of the – We had, Dave, you know, some of these candid conversations and relaxed conversations. David Price, you know, told us the story of him walking into Tim Corbin's office and saying, I don't want to do this. It's freshman year, and I just want to go flip burgers at McDonald's. I just want to be a normal kid. And just think about how different his life would be if, you know, Tim Corbin didn't have that conversation with then a freshman David Price. Mookie Betts came on here and told us about, you know, the time when, you know, he just maybe he was thinking about switching sports. So I get it. You went to North Carolina. You were a high draft pick. But you had to have had a fork in the road at some point in your playing career, right, as an athlete. Where was that moment for you where maybe you questioned or something happened where you were even thinking about switching sports? I don't know how you're going to answer it, but where would you go with that?
Well, I think it was at North Carolina my freshman year. Again, I just the adversity that you just deal with as a freshman coming in, and everything's kind of been about you, and you've always won and always had success, and you were a large part of it. And I think being in North Carolina going into that freshman season with a team that had just won a national championship, and you know, we were coming in as some brash, you know, freshmen that has. Myself, Rasheed Wallace, and Jeff McInnes. And it was just like, it was tough, man, just a challenge because, you know, obviously you felt like you should have been playing more. Even in practice, I felt like I was, you know, handling my business there, but it wasn't translating. I was still only playing probably 18 minutes a game and getting 12 and 13 points in those 18 minutes. So I'm just like, man, I don't know if this is the right spot for me. And I was like, you know, I remember one day coming back home from the dorm and my mom was in the car, and I was just like, I'm just lamenting to her, you know. She just hears me out the whole way, just like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I could be doing more, this and that, the other. And she heard me out the whole way. And then she just finally, you know, at the end, just like, if you start running now, you're going to be running the rest of your life. And that just was something that stuck with me. And probably less than 10 days later, I'm the most outstanding player of the ACC tournament. So just like, man, you know, a couple of things, just learning how to deal with adversity. But I think one of the key things there is just learning to listen to adults. Like you said, listening to Coach Corbin or listening to your parents at 18, 17, 18, 19 years old, we don't have it figured out. We think we do. But, you know, having those people that have gone through some things and have seen some things and them telling you that it's okay to go through some things, I think that changed my life. If I go somewhere else, I'm probably not here right now. So I'm just glad that I had, you know, that type of figure to kind of put me in my place.
Wow, what a great line. And it does seem like that fork is around that age group that you said. I feel like all these stories that we've gotten are like the 17, 18, 19-year-old range. So you're still very early on in your coaching career. There's no manual that shows you the longer you do this, you're going to have to face – those types of things as a head coach, where a kid's going to come into your office, you know, and question whatever. There's no manual to show you how to handle that. Your mom just gave you a great line and great advice that you've carried with you throughout. How do you think you'll handle those situations? Who are some people other than your mother, and maybe who's a coach that you played for that can help you when you have to face those situations as a head coach? You can give the right advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still my parents. You know, I think, you know, not so much just, and there's more life issues than just basketball issues. You know, I think, you know, from a basketball standpoint, I can tell you what needs to happen and what's going on because I lived it. But just kind of dealing with, you know, this generation Z, it's different because they know so much. Again, they have access to so much information, And it's just, you know, not that they, I think there's a lot of people like to say, well, they're softer than we were back then. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case. It's just, again, they have so much more information at their fingertips, you know, through social media, through what, so they know more. So we just have to deal with them a little differently. But I think those same stories I share in our recruiting visits when I talk to kids, like, it's not always going to go right here. You know what I'm saying? If you're expecting it to go perfect, if you come to Vanderbilt and play for me, then you probably need to go somewhere else. It's not going to happen like that. Life is not like that. And it's, but again, if you work and you're passionate about it and you put, you know, the time and the energy in it, I think those things transcend time. You know what I'm saying? So if you got those principles and you got that type of makeup, things normally work out for you. And those are the type of guys that we look for and really, you know, press to try to be a part of our, you know, what we're doing and what we're trying to build.
We're talking to Jerry Stackhouse, the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodore basketball program. And coach, I want to ask you, I'm sure a lot of people have tried to pick your brain with your perspective as we've all watched The Last Dance. And one of the things that dawns on me is you know, you watch an NBA game today, and it's a big story if a team doesn't hit 100 points. But when you first got into the NBA during this era that we were just focusing on with towards the last few years of Michael Jordan's career, you look at the end final score of a lot of those games, great battles that we all watched, and the score might be 83-79. It was just a different played game, the way they sort of let contact go with defenders. You could get away with a lot more. Take us back to that time, especially when you got into the league. It was not easy to score, was it?
No, I mean, I think the game changed. I mean, you had teams like in the 80s with the Denver Nuggets and those guys. I mean, the West Coast teams, they were putting up 130s. So it's like the game kind of goes in cycles. And for, I think Detroit kind of started it, you know, toward the end of that Bad Boys era. They felt like putting defense in the game and making it tough. I think they were kind of the pioneers of, you know, leading into the 90s when the games were, you know, more about defense and getting stops, even though you had great offensive players and guys that could put up big, you know, big scoring nights. You were still, like, Michael had 35, had 40, and the game was still, you know, 87. So I just think it was a lot less possession, and that was something that was, you know, a point of emphasis from the league and the board of governors to have more freedom of movement. And then you have, you know, the Steph Currys, and those, I think those guys were game changers because they lived behind the 3-point line. It was nothing for him to come, you know, past half court, two or three, you know, steps past half court and let it go, and it's a good shot for him. And then you see James Harden. So I just think the game changes a little bit, but it was definitely different. I mean, I don't know if it was better or worse. You know, I mean, I enjoyed all the eras. I enjoyed the 80s and the 90s and even the game now, but it's definitely different, man. You know, we used to, you know, but the game, you had the guys isolated and they had to be above the 3-point line so you could play one-on-one and do different things. And that's just not the game now. It's more spacing, more timing, more. I wouldn't want to coach me right now. You know, really. I mean, really, just because I wanted to play in the mid range, I want to play in the mid post. You know, you stopping the ball while I do my thing, and now it's more about passing, cutting, and getting space and giving other guys room to work. So it's just a different game. Still a great, beautiful game, but just different.
Well, you just hit on one thing that I think is very apparent now, especially with analytics and the influence of the 3-point line. You just mentioned it, Coach, that it's almost a lost art form. And you could see Michael Jordan doing it a lot, catching the ball in the medium post, 8 feet out, 10 feet out, and just going to work because, as you said, the illegal defense, you couldn't, you either had to double or you had to stay. You couldn't sort of be in between. And now we just don't see guys do that. But, and so the artistic part of that game, I miss a lot because it's considered sort of a, you know, a low percentage way to go about it now.
Yeah, and I just think, again, analytics play a huge part in it. And now you would live with that. You would live with Michael Jordan taking a contested mid-range two, and then you come in and try to get more bang for your buck by, you know, getting threes. So it's like over time, you feel like you will win out. And there's still outliers, man. There's guys that are really good in the mid-range, and you encourage those. But I think when you look at it as a whole and look at the numbers as a whole, that it's just, you know, it's, you get more bang for your buck by instead of taking that one step in by shot faking and sidestepping, or even get another higher percentage by getting all the way to the basket and possibly getting fouled or getting a layup. So it's, you know, but again, if there's guys that do it at a, you know, unbelievable clip that are outliers, you still encourage. But if not, then let's play to the numbers and get a little bit more bang for a buck.
You have a unique perspective on Michael Jordan. You grew up in North Carolina. You played for the Tar Heels, and then you go into the NBA and you've played against Michael Jordan. How did Michael Jordan influence your life, either directly or indirectly, throughout your development?
Well, I just think we all wanted to be Michael Jordan in some form, you know, just from being an athlete and how he was so, you know, graceful and, you know, just athletic, you know, going to the rim, everything that he did, you know, was like, you know, somebody posted something yesterday with me in the McDonald's game, you know, in the McDonald's slam dunk contest, and I got on a gold chain. I got on a gold chain because Michael Jordan had a gold chain in the slam dunk contest. And, you know, so just all those stuff that I got an earring when I was in high school, and my mom thought she was going to lose her mind about the earring. And then all I had to say, Michael Jordan got an earring, and then all of a sudden it was okay. So it's like, you know, he influenced us in so many ways. But again, just, you know, getting there and competing, it was a, you know, kind of a different time. As I was coming into the league, he was just kind of coming back. You know, he took off some time and was coming back. So so it was like, man, it took him a little while to kind of get himself back together that first year when they lost to Orlando. And then he was back to being who he was. And we were still all kind of in awe of him, even though we were playing against them and, you know, and that Bulls team. It was like, we're playing them, but we're really not going to beat them. And I think that was kind of the mindset. It was a little bit different when he came back after going and playing baseball. It felt like we were a little bit closer. But obviously we were still a step or two away. And I think, you know, obviously I was with him for a year in Washington, and I think that's where a lot of our guys that came in the early 90s felt like we had finally caught up. You know, we seen Michael to where we could really look at him eye to eye and feel like, okay, we can actually beat him now.
How was he as a teammate for you, especially with all that background, your North Carolina connection and stuff? There's a lot of dynamic in that Last Dance about what he was like to be a teammate with. So what was your experience like?
Well, my experience with him was different because, again, I'm an alpha male myself. So, we tap danced around each other, honestly, a lot, you know, just to – because, again, you saw some of the stuff that you saw in the and stuff like that. And, how he talked to certain of his teammates, that wouldn't have went too well with me. But, you know, we knew that, you know, and we've had tremendous respect for him. And, obviously, like I said, from those years and then – getting to see him at the end of career when he, you know, battling injuries and wasn't really, you know, who we had known him to be. It was just something that, you know, and I've been on record to say it was just something that I could have done without. You know, me coming from Detroit and we're, you know, making it to the second round of the playoffs and then all of a sudden I'm getting, you know, and I know why I was traded to Washington. I mean, he wanted to go out with a bang. He wanted someone else to ride with him. But it was just, it's hard when you've always been the man and is the greatest of all time in my mind, to, you know, ever relinquish that role of being that guy on the team. And I just felt like at that particular time that I was better suited to carry our team. And I think a lot of our, you know, our team felt that way, but it was just, it's Michael Jordan, you know, so you just kind of go about your business and wait till it's over.
We're talking to Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And you also played against Scottie Pippen, who was featured a lot in The Last Dance, and now his son plays for you at Vanderbilt. A young talent, young guy that's still growing into his own. But what was it like of knowing that he's coming into your program and you're trying to develop him as a player, but he also has that pressure, I guess, of how much of a great career his dad had? How were you able to coach that and help him through some of that?
Well, I mean, Scotty's really talented. Scotty Jr. is really talented, man. He just has an understanding of the game, you know, similar to like his dad. His dad was really a point guard. So, I mean, I think, you know, just being able to grow up with, you know, that type of, you know, figure and a guy and having his, you know, understanding and mindset toward the game, you know, I handed him the ball from day one. And it was like, there was really no doubt because, like, when we really took over here, we didn't know. We had some guys that jumped in the transfer portal. We had some guys that had, you know, one guy that committed and then, you know, decided he wasn't coming. So, you know, but that was never the case. Scotty has always been a big fan of mine. You know, he was, you know, even when he was doing some ESPN, he was always touting me for, you know, jobs at the NBA. He had watched me work. So when I had an opportunity to coach his kid, it was like a no-brainer. You know, man, we're coming. And I think he's, you know, we're excited about his potential, man, and what he could do. I'm hoping that he gets those 5 inches that Scotty got between his freshman and sophomore year.
Yeah, how's that coming? Has he got any inches? He's got a half inch or two since the season ended?
Hey, man, I just want to be pleasantly surprised. I'm not even going to. I'm not even going to, but no. But if he gets that, man, you watch out because, again, he can, I mean, he shoots it, he scores it, he's unselfish. I mean, he understands what we're doing on defensive end. He understands what we want to get done offensively. So I'm excited to coach him. You know, hopefully catch those 5 inches, you know, between his junior and sophomore year, because I think if he catch him right now, he might not be here too much longer.
We had the opportunity to talk to you after the first SEC win, and that obviously was a big thing to check off the list as you try and build this program, you know, back and build it in your image. So since that time, there were some other wins as well. How did you feel, though, at the end of your first season, looking at the progress that you all made from the beginning to the end?
Well, man, again, it just goes back to other lessons that I learned earlier in the year. I mean, early in my life, like I said, back in North Carolina, like the same thing, just different. Like, we dealt with some adversity when Cleavon, you know, went down. And then when Aaron went down, you know, it was just like, okay, now we got to, you know, revamp and try to reinvent who we are on the fly in the middle of SEC play. So, I mean, I think, you know, for a lot of those kids, they could have easily, like, wrote it off, man. Our best big man and our best player is gone. You know, woe is me. But, no, they just continue to work, and we continue to kind of observe them as a team and find out things that we could do, and they played hard, man. They played their butts off every night, and I always would say, man, I've never seen it happen to where when you come in with the right approach and you come in and do the right things, that something good doesn't happen for you at some point during the season. And it did. We had a nice uptick toward the end of the season going into the SEC tournament, you know, just, you know, figuring out who we are, and it was good for those guys. I mean, we had guys that had flashes and had moments all year, but they really started to put it together there. So, you know, we were disappointed that we weren't able to just kind of transition right into the summer and keep that work going and, you know, take advantage of that uptick that we finished on. But, you know, we'll be back at some point, and hopefully we'll be able to continue it, you know, once we're all back together again.
Let's end with this. You just brought up the SEC tournament. You guys were the last game, right? You were the second game in the nightcap.
Yeah, we were the last game. Yep.
You were literally the last game in the SEC. So that you were the last game played this college basketball season in the conference. How weird was it, especially at halftime? I think they had made the announcement that they were not going to have fans in the stands the following day. And, of course, we know that the following day would never take place. But how weird was that game that night? Or was it?
Well, I mean, I just, you know, thinking back on it, I wish they could have done that 24 hours before. That'd be one less loss on the record. But
that was an honest answer.
You know, but man, it was just an eerie time, man. Like I said, it's unprecedented. We haven't, you know, dealt with any pandemic before. It was kind of scary, and you know, the kids really weren't in it. You know, I think, you know, just, you know, we did some good things in that game, or just wasn't making shots. I don't know if it was guys were, you know, 1 foot on the court and 1 foot, you know, trying to get home. And as soon as that, you know, they canceled it, everything happened so abruptly to where, you know, we were trying to get everybody home, get everybody safe. You know, it was just, just a tough situation, you know, during those times, man. But again, you know, I was just glad that we were able to keep everybody safe, and the guys finished up strong. I mean, even with all the distractions of having to go home and have classes online and do all those things, I mean, we still finished with like a 3-5 for the year, man. So really proud of them being able to, again, work through that adversity and finish up strong. So that's good on all fronts.
Jerry, thanks for the time, as always. It's always good to catch up with you. You continue to be safe, and we'll certainly talk to you down the road, and hopefully we'll be talking about your team hitting the court this year. So thanks for doing this.
Man, we're excited. We're excited about it. Can't wait to get them back, man. You guys stay safe as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Coach. That is Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt basketball coach. Good conversation with him. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer blackjack and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.